Guys, in today's presentation, what we're going to be covering is a little bit of a chat around some of the history of real estate and what it's been in Australia over the last 30, 40 odd years. And we can learn a lot from history, particularly when we talk about cycles and those sort of things. So where we've been, where we are right now in that cycle, and then what's likely to happen in the future, where that's going, what we can expect out of the next few years of investing and what it means to us, what action do we have to take to actually capitalize on that.
For creative investing, positive cash flow, manufactured growth, property development, asset protection, wealth creation, and much, much more. This is Not the Average Real Estate Podcast by Not Your Average Real Estate Investor. Dipna Boholt used real estate to completely replace the income from her accountancy practice with passive income in just 18 months. Welcome to the I Love Real Estate Podcast.
Hey guys, Dipna Boholt here. Welcome to the I Love Real Estate Podcast series where, you know, we talk about the latest trends in real estate. We talk about what's happening in real estate. We talk to some of the movers and shakers in real estate. And we talk about how we can accelerate your results. I mean, that's really what I Love Real Estate is about. It's about accelerating your results to get to where you want to go fast, rather than waiting there 20, 30 years that, you know, you might end up doing the normal track. Now, today's talking about movers and shakers. I have John Gian with me. Now, John, he's got an amazing story himself. He's been involved in the real estate industry for a long time. He's created many successful businesses over the years. He writes a blog, which is very interesting, and we're going to be talking about that. So without any further ado, welcome, John.
Hey, Dipna.
How are you?
Really good.
Good, good. So obviously, you and I have been working together for quite some time. How do you remember how we met? I mean, my version might be a little bit different to your version.
It probably is different because we met when I moved up to the Sunshine Coast many, many moons ago. And you were around that time. You had a bit of a reputation, emerging reputation of being a bit of an accountant who had a property background.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we sort of gravitated to. Back then, you know, there wasn't a lot of seminars around, there wasn't a lot of content around that area. And finding someone who was in the real estate game who had some context, especially from an accounting point of view, there wasn't too many around, especially on the Sunshine Coast. there's a lot of things up there, but there's not a lot of forward thinking, you know, economic minded.
Now, don't know why, it's a beautiful place to live.
Yeah, well, you sort of go up there with a whole different view in mind. And we went up there to focus on a business. We were getting involved in this heart kind of seminar thing as well. So we moved up there specifically to do that.
I remember you creeping into the back of the room there when I was speaking on stage at one stage, and then within a couple of weeks, I remember an appointment in my diary in my accountancy office, and you came in to see me.
I was probably looking for the bar, so...
You took a wrong turn, did you?
I thought, this is interesting. But I was a bit of a seminar junkie, I have to admit, you know, that's sort of what led me getting into the industry, and I was in that industry well and truly when we met. But what was interesting, and I think a lot of people, when they first hear your name and they don't have a picture, they think of you of all sorts of things other than a blonde Queensland country girl.
Most people either think I'm Indian or Greek.
Yes, and I thought you were Indian.
Did you now?
Because I knew you weren't Greek, because I've got a Greek background, and I know when a name is sort of named to the Greek.
You realise it's Welsh and Irish.
Now I do. You know, I know there's saints named after your honour.
Yes, all that stuff.
Stuff like that. So
let's talk about you. How did you get involved in real estate? What was your first deal? How did you feel? What happened?
Well, it goes back, I've been involved several decades now in real estate, but it went back to when I first got involved in wanting to make money, and I would go to different types of seminars in Australia. And a lot of the seminars back then, there wasn't really a lot of real estate seminars. I mean, Jan Summers had written a book in the 80s. We're talking 80s now, sort of, you know, late-ish 80s or mid-80s. There was a lot of seminars around stock market trading, and I went to one in particular which had a slight slew of a real estate story. That sort of sparked my interest, but it wasn't the first place I went. I got into stock market first because it was, you know, we're looking after cash flow. That was the...
How'd you go with that?
Well, I became a very good stock market trader. It's a funny story around that, because what actually ended up happening, I went and learned all this cycle analysis stuff through a guy called W.D. Gann, and I was infatuated with the whole thing, you know, and I was doing it full time, meaning that I was trying to succeed full time, you know. And we used to hand draw charts by hand. That was the whole concept where you have to.
I remember actually, those days.
Yeah.
I was financial control of a stockbroking firm at one stage.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so hand drawing chart, like we had the bar charts, and was the open, high, low, and we had this big, like A3, whatever's bigger than
A3. You got your red ones and your green ones.
Yeah, like just graph chart. And yeah. We would say open, high, low, close there, and we'd put it on walls and try to pick a picture, and that was the whole philosophy we were in there. And it was very effective, you know. I mean, you could actually still today pick market highs and market lows through the full moon. I mean, crazy stuff, astrology, all that sort of stuff. It was really weird stuff, and it's still very, very interesting. It still applies today if you really want to dig into it. And that's what I got involved with. I traded for about 12 months. I opened up an account with $5,000. I got it up to around $60,000, $65,000, which was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And then around the 8-9 month time, I started losing big chunks of money. So I would make like $2,000, $500, $3,000, $6,000, and then I'd lose $20,000, $25,000. and eventually I closed my account with $3,500 in it. And I was trading with an ANZ platform back then. And I went to my broker and I said, look, I'm done. I can't do this because, you know, I can't even buy groceries anymore. I've lost my nerve. I've lost all this money. And the ANZ broker at the time says, John, you're one of our best traders. And I said, how's that possible? I mean, he goes...
Because they make a brokerage regardless of what you do.
Well, that's true. But he says, listen, mate, you know, we've got people walking here wanting to trade. And this was futures. I wasn't even trading stocks. I was trading the pointy end of, the financial market where you get the best traders. Little did I know that then. I was just trading a concept, you know, and ideas and a methodology. So he says, mate, people tear up hundreds of thousands of dollars within months. He said, you've just lost... How much did you start with? $5,000? You just lost $1,500. Now, it didn't make me feel any better because, you know, it's still a loss. So that's when I transitioned to real estate. And I thought, well, okay, I'm no good at stock trading. Why don't I try and look at real estate? And I got fascinated by the real estate market, started reading books, going to a lot of seminars, and bought my first deal just before the stock market crashed in 87. Thought, this is a good time to buy real estate from what I'm reading, what I'm gathering. And I bought a double front in Thornbury for about $87,000. That was my first deal. However, I thought that I'll just get into real estate, and that's how I'll make money. That's how I'll make my cash flow, right? First of all, I learned that it takes a lot more money to get involved. You know, you need a deposit. And back then, you couldn't get away with a 10% deposit. You needed like bigger than 20%. And then I thought, well, I bought real estate. I should be making a lot of money. I should, you know, I can't retire on it, but I should be making a lot of cash flow. Then there was a thing called interest, expenses, and I wasn't negative geared, but I was very much, you know, neutral geared from the perspective of what was coming in and coming out. So I didn't feel rich. So I felt that at that point in time, I needed to sort of get more education around my strategy.
And negative gearing back then was big. I mean, that was, that was 1985 was when negative gearing really started.
Mm.
And so by, you know, 1987, end of the 80s, into the 90s, it was big deal. That's what everybody was telling you to do.
Yeah, and unfortunately...
Accountants included.
Yeah, well, I wasn't getting much advice from accountants because I didn't really sort of, you know, I wasn't at that stage in my life to use them as advisors, and they probably didn't know much anyway.
They'd tell you to negatively gear, I can tell you. I was one.
Yeah, if you're on a big income, you know, if you're on a substantial income, that was their only strategy of choice. Mm. So I did that, and I sat back and I expected to become like this passive income sort of mogul, and I waited and I waited and I waited, and nothing happened. And, you know, you sort of think, oh, hang on a second. I must have missed something in the books because I'm supposed to, you know, get rich out of real estate. And I realised that it's a longer game to play, and I realised there was other things.
So have you still got that property?
Well, I'll tell you what happened with that property. No, unfortunately not. I got into business because I thought, okay, I've done shares, I've done property, I'm not rich, I've got to get into business.
Mm-hmm.
So I get into this business. Back then I was in the manufacturing industry, and I got into this business. It's what I used to do. Part-time. I had a really warped sense of what cash flow was, really, because I was earning, I didn't get it, my first job wasn't until when I was 24, 25 years old, right, which is really strange, and I wasn't unemployed, I've never taken, I was I was earning money through the process of being involved in semi-professional sport, playing soccer, and also doing some, I was involved in a band. We used to play at wedding bar mitzvahs and all that sort of stuff. And I was earning good money. I mean, it was all tax-free money. I'm happy to say that today. I'm not happy to disclose it back then. And, you know, my dad at the time was earning $350 a week, and I was earning, doing what I loved, $600-$700 a week. Mm. So I had a really warped sense of, you know,
what reality was.
What was possible. I was living the dream, and then obviously I had to get a job because my parents were always on my back saying, you know, the neighbours are talking about you, they think you're a drug dealer, you know, because, you know, you're getting a job. And it forced me into just getting any job. That's how I went into the clothing industry, more than just to turn up between 9 and 5. But my life really started after 5, you know, sports and music. So, what was the question again?
Have you still got the property?
Oh, my God, we go on tangents. I said no. That property, I mean, it was interesting from a cycle point of view, because going back now, not knowing it then, really, you know, I suppose we're going to talk a little bit about today's cycle, which is of great value to the audience and the listeners and the whole community, is I bought it in early 87, and then we had the crash, and then the stock market tanked badly, but the property market shot up, but also interest rates shot up too.
That's right.
And that property would have gone from the $87,000 I bought it, it probably went to $150,000 within 3 years, right?
Yep.
And then we had the commercial market crash, you know, the actual commercial market crash and the property market crash because of interest rates.
Keating and the recession we all had to have, remember that?
Yeah. So we went back, I mean, I sold that property because it was sort of tied into a business that I was getting involved in. I was running out of money in business. I got a few lessons there as well. And I sold that property for $135,000. Still a good deal.
Yep.
But I'd eaten it just about as much equity as I can out of that. And remember, I'd borrowed at 150, so I'd come back and I was pressing up against the parameters of the margin, you know, the 80-20 margin, which I had back then. So I had to sell it because it was costing me now more than what I was bringing in.
What would that place be worth today, do you think?
In Thornbury, yep. Double front, unrenovated, 1.4, unrenovated, double front in Thornbury. It was good street.
And I mean, that's a lesson for everybody listening too, that, you know, eventually property does go up, even if you buy the worst lemon in the street. Mm. It will go up in value. And, I mean, we've all, me included, sold properties we wish to God we still had today. Mm. And, you know, it's just a factor of time.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, fortunately I've got some of those properties that I bought really early, I mean, later on, and they still hold on to them. And that, you know, that some of them have gone up 5 times.
Yeah, that's right.
$200,000, they've gone up $1 million, so...
Well, you actually write a bit of a blog now on the state of play and what's happening and those sort of things. You're a little bit controversial, I think, in some of the things you say. What do you want to talk about with that?
We've been working together for 10 years and, you know, we got together around 2006 because you had obviously a skill set of education and congruency in area investing. And I've learned a lot from working closely together with you extended that learning into other areas. I don't think it's that controversial. I just think that it's for my own benefit, especially the whole research side, that, you know, trying to work out what indicators to follow and or what are good key indicators. And we obviously do it from a point of view of actually helping the community.
Absolutely.
And getting that information out. And you've done obviously a magnificent job in getting it out there and being around the research. And we spoke about GAN research as well, which would sort of almost come back into we're teaching people about Phil Anderson's work
and how it applies to real estate.
Yeah.
I mean, he started obviously, he died back in 1955, but he started with his theories talking about the human philosophy and things like that and the markets and in shares. Mm. But a lot of that overlays very, very nicely into the real estate market.
Yeah, and Phil's done a great job, and you were talking off air recently about someone coming up to you at a recent event and saying, You explain it better than he does. And Phil's a very casual, easygoing Aussie sort of bloke, very laconic. And I think if he amped his presentation style up a little bit, he would cut through it because it's very, very relevant, the stuff that we can talk about, you know, where we are in the cycle right now based on his work and what we can figure, right? And you know, I reckon you've probably sold more books fulfill and fill the soul for himself.
Probably. He's not a particularly good marketer.
No, he's a terrible marketer. So, you know, it's just the stop. And unfortunately, that's the problem. It doesn't cut through. And what we're hearing on a consistent basis is, you know, we're so sensitive to the daily news, and we're thinking, you know, prices are high, unaffordability is impossible, etc. We have Americans who come in, who've gone now. I mean,
yep.
Who've come in and said, you know, it's about to crash, you know. Yep. And the way they run their data set is they base it on, you know, false figures.
Mm. And know, fear.
And obviously, they take advantage of fear and they cut through and they get on the Channel 9 News or the Channel 7 News. But where are those guys? I mean, where's Stephen King these days? You know? Or where's Egon, the guy who said, you know, that you know, real estate, Australian real estate is going to fall by 40%? He's a professor. He's not a dumb guy. He just got it wrong.
Yeah.
Right? He just got it wrong. I mean, I don't think I'm smarter than Phil. I'm definitely not smarter than him, right? But he got it so wrong where he sold his property in Sydney, in Surry Hills.
Yep.
Right? And since that time, he's probably lost. Surry Hills, you know, two-bedroom apartment in Surry Hills is $1 million. Mm. Back then, it's now $2 million, right?
Easily.
He sold $1 million based on his own bias. Mm. Right? Based on his own bias. So you've got to be careful about falling in love with the opinion of anybody, right?
And I think you've got to be careful of the headline, because the headlines are designed to create fear, etc., so that you can sell more newspapers or sell more advertising, etc. And it's very easy to fall into the downward spiral of being a glass half empty.
Mm.
You know, and I really think it's something that people really need to question in themselves. Are they a glass half empty or are they a glass half full? Because, you know, you will see the kind of results that you expect to see. And if you're focusing on the negative, that's what you're going to see everywhere. Whereas you're focusing on the positive, you can see this person making money and that person making money and this one here's gone up in value, and, you know, it's back to that old glass half full or empty.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have opinions today, and we'll probably get to those opinions now, and they'll be of interest. But, you know, because we're dialing back through through time, which is really interesting because you've got plenty of history in that, but, you know, and you remember this really, really well, and it was like this.
You're telling me I'm old.
Well, mature. Sage.
Is that what it is? Wisdom.
I'm born in the same year. So
I know we
amazing,
are.
Amazing synchronicity.
I know, I just thought I'd catch you out.
Time, right? You remember this well. It was only 2011, which seems like a long time ago for us, because, you know, we've done a lot of miles, you know, in the last 10 years together. But you remember when Donald Trump came out, Robert Kiyosaki, Anthony Robbins, and Harv Eker. And well, Donald Trump's message was, it was more of a keynote. But
it was more about what hairspray he uses.
Yeah, yeah. And
let's be serious. That's what he talked about.
And let me just say for the audience, say people have got a view of Donald Trump. He was amazing behind you know, the
scenes.
Screen.
Yes, he was.
He was friendly.
He was
calm. He was complimentary. He was present.
Hmm.
You know, and you've got someone like Anthony Robbins. With all due respect, he's an absolute super diva. You know, trampolines, all that sort of stuff. Can't, you know, don't look him in the eyes. You know, all this protocol around there. Totally Donald Trump worth much, much more and having much more influence. You know, just no protocol, complete open zones. Fantastic guy, right, from that perspective. Now, you know, with his politics, another story. We're not going to go there. But it's more around the message of, you know, Harv Eker, who most people won't know. He's a personal development guy from the States. He's written a couple of books, big books. Millionaire Mind is one. Great book. But his message in Donald and Robert Kiyosaki's message was doom and gloom for Australia.
Yep, you know? That's exactly right.
And then you were also presenting, and you come on, ballsy and all, as you are, and that's why I think people resonate with you. You go, these guys are totally wrong. They've got it wrong. You know, they don't live in Australia. They don't understand Australia. And they, you know, I don't know what their agenda is, you know. Mm. They were selling fear, effectively. Mm. Kiyosaki got it wrong. He's still getting it wrong.
Yeah, he's still saying go into silver and, you know, and out of the real estate market. He's really not a real estate guy, let's face it. I mean, he wrote a great book, and the book has changed the mindset of a generation, and that is fantastic. But when it gets to the nitty-gritty, it just ain't there.
So you're sort of like this, you know, Jesuit, you know, sort of coming out, standing on your big, you know, sort of milk container and going, guys, I don't agree. And they're going, well, you know, and the only guy who wasn't on that bill probably fell in that same category, Harry S. Dent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like Harry S. Dent. I've read a lot of his material, and he got a lot of the spending thing down pat, and how, you know, people spend in different ages and how it affects the economy. He's got that down pat, and he's got the baby boomer generation, but he's also fallen in love in his research, and he sells newsletters through the process of beer. We also, you know, people can sort of question us. We sell the upside of real estate, and we've got an agenda as well, because we're in the education process. Mm. You know, we've got services and courses and course content.
We've got evidence. You know, student after student, you know, making this much money on that deal, this much money on that deal, you know, and that's what it's really about. You know, you are judged by your results, and they're getting results, good and results.
Great results. And we don't hear half of them. We have only 10%, because people out there doing the thing, and they don't come forward for many different reasons, for privacy, for the fact that we don't get around to them, and we're not that proactive in, you know.
They're just out there doing it.
Yeah, they're in there actually taking advantage of it. But that was a really refreshing message, 2011. Now, if you're in that audience, 2011, and you listen to this article and you miss the Dipner Bohol presentation and you walk out, you go and sell everything.
That's right.
In Melbourne, and same presentation in Sydney. Sydney, I mean, you've just lost $500,000
more
money. Let's just say your own home, right? $500,000 more, yeah, I agree, more. Of money that you've never worked for that just accumulates over time. That's why I love real estate.
And it's tax-free if it's your home.
That's right. But just the easiest money you'll make ever, in my opinion, is the money that you make on equity that goes up over time. Now, you have to support that with some sort of, you know, understanding of where we are and why things move. And, you know, if you want to talk about that, and that's the sort of stuff I talk about, you know, I put out, you know, two notes a week. One's more of a, you know, on Friday, it's more about, you know, just my freewheeling personal development, sort of biased and you know, going in all sorts of directions. But one of those blogs is very much a sort of economic-directed stuff that I see going around, and I see good times ahead.
So let's talk about those cycles, because I think you and I are both on the same wavelength there, but where do you see us at the moment?
Well, I see us in a mid-cycle slowdown. That's what I'm calling it right now, right?
I actually don't think we're there yet. Well, I think we're close to it.
Yeah, exactly.
And particularly Sydney. Melbourne's a little bit further behind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, and if you look at, this is where we're going, yeah, I agree, we're going into sort of a mid-cycle slowdown. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sydney's probably flatlining, you can see that, but they've had such a great run.
That's right.
You know, they've had.
And let's just talk about what a mid-cycle slowdown is. What it means is that things will level out. You know, the confidence goes out of the market, and goes out of the market because you've got the big headlines going, the bubble's going to burst. So people pull back. Lending's a bit tougher. So, you know, that puts a little bit of a resistance into the market. So people pull back and they just kind of sit there. It doesn't necessarily mean that prices are going to fall off the tree, because the only way the price can really fall, if you're a fundamentalist, is that you've got an oversupply in housing. You look at a place like Sydney or Melbourne, for that matter, you're not undersupplied. You may be in certain small sectors of the market, where like inner city apartments and things like that, but in the broad sector of the market, that's not the case at all. You know, you're still effectively undersupplied. And when you're undersupplied, the market can't go down. Mm-hmm. It may sit there till the sentiment catches up with the actual demand and supply curves. But that's really what a mid-cycle slowdown is.
So keep it simple. This is how I keep it simple. I look at a couple of key, you know, indicators. I look at population growth.
Yep.
I look at unemployment rate.
Yep.
And I look at interest rate.
Yep.
And if you just stick to those three indicators, you'll be fine. I think as simpleton as I am, they're the things I look at. And, you know, I was at a recent ANZ sort of high-fluting sort of, you know, boardroom conferences, you know, another 100 people there, high net worth people, and somehow they let me in. Richard Yatzinger, I think his name, sort of ran a 30-40-minute presentation. Pretty good, not dry, had a little bit of humour, you know, told one joke.
And he's an economist.
His overall view here's his summary, here's his 30-minute summarized. The world's sort of ran out of things to worry about. That's how we opened up. So, you know, it was a good way to open up. He goes, look, we were concerned about Europe, this, the other, the Greece, Spain, or, you know, defaults, currency. Now we're not so worried about it anymore. We're worried about China, and they seem to have settled. We're worried about America before Trump. Trump comes on, we're worried about Trump in America, and then we're going, well, actually, their numbers are looking quite strong. So all of a sudden, from a point of view of going, we've got all this shit to worry about, now we've got nothing to worry about, things are going quite well. So that in perspective puts the world in perspective, where there's less things to worry about. Now, they're all worried about you know, events that come from left field, right? But we're not at that stage. We're not at that stage. Yeah. So that's why we're quite quietly confident that we believe that things go in cycles, and the real estate cycle is not 7 years. It's a longer cycle than seven years. And we, my belief is, we've had the GFC. Australia avoided what it avoided because of the demand of China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's quite evident that that's the reason why we didn't go into a recession, because of the demand of China buying ore. That's now sort of subsided and sort of ended in the ferocity that it was once. And now we're back into the normal cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unlikely that we have any real major issues going forward. However, we will have, you know, prices, people go, well, can prices go up from here? Of course they can.
Well, they've been saying that for centuries.
Yeah.
The prices can't get any higher, and you're back in, you know, what'd you buy that place for? 87,000, and it'd be worth what today?
1.4.
There you go.
So, yes, they can, but not next week or not this year. And it goes, you know, I'll go back, because, you know, when the GFC hit, you know, we took a totally different approach. I mean, we were running ads, and we were getting people's attention by saying, why the GFC in America is good news for Australia.
It was fantastic.
Because, and then you went on the rant, you know, our banking system is different, and it was opinion based on proof, right? And this is what
Well, I was fighting a political argument at the time, or a newspaper, you know, story at the time, where the Sydney prices were going to fall by 40%. That's what all the big guys were saying. I'm going, that is a load of crap. It just can't.
Yeah.
You know, even from fundamental economics, it couldn't do that.
Exactly. And Sydney topped 2004. That was their cycle
yep.
top, right? Now, then we're talking 2008, 2010.
Yep.
Right? Around that time, we were putting out that sort of content. We were running events,
yep.
you know. And, you know, I must credit you, because you run some really good topical events. You know, you've got the bases covered, and then we always bring in current cycle stuff. So, you know, if people come to the events, they should come back and back and back. I know a lot of people do. But how can a market that's topped in 2004, gone sideways,
mm-hmm.
fall a further 40%? It was clear as day
yep.
that wasn't going to happen. And you were telling people, and also Melbourne as well, guys, get into Sydney, get into Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Sydney's obvious, you know, a market that's going to take off. And it took a little bit longer than we expected.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
But when it came, boy, what's happened in Sydney?
Do you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was in Sydney, and they came up to me and said, you know, I got to thank you. And I said, what's that for? He said, well, about this time when I was saying the Sydney property market's going to go, I actually said, we're in for a Sydney tsunami, and we're not talking about water.
Mm.
And I said, you've got to get in, control as much land as you can. He said, you know, I took your advice against everybody else that was saying, you know, that the market was going to fall. I took your advice, and I went hard. And he said, I got to thank you for something like $3 to $4 million today.
Simple as that.
Mm.
You know, I mean, he got the timing right.
That's right.
You know, and that's the beauty of having a real estate portfolio of building a capital base, you know, and that's, we haven't spoken about building a capital base, but that's really key. You know, I've got a lot of friends and myself, you know, we've got some significant capital base. So if the Melbourne market moved, depending on who you follow, 16.5%, you know, year to year, the Sydney market, despite that we're saying it's flat, actually probably will show about 12%.
That's right.
You know? We've got Hobart going well, you know, we've got Brisbane going well, and obviously, you know, Perth is coming out of the slump. We can see that on the charts, indication that
that's right.
coming out of the slump. You recently ran an event there, and there was a lot of interest.
Mm.
You know,
and infrastructure spending over there is phenomenal.
Yeah, so that's a place to look. Adelaide's, you know, bubbling along. And
it's
going,
doing its thing. It's doing just fine.
It's going okay.
Yeah.
And that's the big picture stuff. That's the lazy investor's model.
Yep.
You know, where they go, oh, what's the next hot spot market? That's the lazy. But we teach people, and you teach people, more so than, you know, I sort of espouse them on my my notes and the blogs that I put out, is that there's another level above that, which is the active investor's market, right? And you can, and we've seen this through the results of our own labour and the results of other students, you can, within any cycle, there's people in Perth making a lot of money.
Absolutely.
There's people in Adelaide making a lot of money. There's people in Sydney making a lot of money. There's people in Melbourne. So you have to get to understand that there's a market within the market, and there's plenty of markets in all markets. We're
That's
not talking
right.
about one market. We're talking about thousands of markets. And I think a lot of people are starting to get that, understand that, because real estate isn't it's not an efficient market. You know, it's not like BHP. You can't buy BHP for $18 if it's $23.
That's right.
But you can buy a single front in Richmond for $18 when it's $23.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can buy a property that you can add value to, right? that is inefficient. You know, like other people don't see.
It's more subjective.
Exactly. So you've got those opportunities in real estate which you don't have in the stock market, and you have less manipulation, you've got more control, so it's obviously a better vehicle to go through. But just on the point of capital base, you've got to get to the point, and this is your point of don't sell, where if you've got $10 million of a portfolio and the market moves by 5%, you've just made $500,000 of equity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're in business, and you know, I'm in business, and I constantly think about business as part of it's what I bring to your world,
mm-hmm.
that adds value. $500,000 of profit, like $500,000 of equity, is the same thing. It's essentially the same thing because it's real money, right?
Yep.
It's actually one step better because in business you'll get taxed on it. And if you don't sell in real estate, you don't get taxed on it. So you can actually compound that profit. So it's actually slightly better. But how much do you have to earn as a gross turnover in business to generate $500,000 of profit? And you, in your old days, you were an accountant, you'd have to earn sometimes 1 in 5, maybe 1 in 20 of that. So you times that by 10,
mm-hmm.
or you times that by 5, and you times it by 10. So you'd have to earn 2.5 million by 5, or 5 million turnover. You have to have a $5 million turnover in business to earn $500,000 in profit, which is about 10% of mm-hmm. the turnover. And there's some businesses do better than that, but the upside, the problem with business is you can earn minus $500,000, right?
That's right.
So that's why real estate is such an effective vehicle, and that's why we house real estate and we put all, you know, as much as we can going forward. So,
but it's really a matter of maintaining cash flow as well, because if you go down the old road of negative gearing, for example, you know, you can't keep holding properties because you run out of serviceability.
Yeah.
Whereas when you've got the cash flow to go with it, or even something neutrally geared as opposed to positively geared, you know, you can afford to keep going and get another one and another one.
Yeah, and that's
the balance. It's a balance of the two.
That's the balance that you've brought to the marketplace. You know, everyone sees you. I think a lot of people have gravitated to you because of that balance of getting that right. And I do have an unfair advantage. I mean, you're one of them. having access to you, you know, when I need it, it's good. You know, I mean, I take my own lead on that as well. I lead from the front in that department as well for myself. I bring stuff to the table that, you know, you could also share to the community. But I also, the perfect balance, and we've got it, let's face it. Mm-hmm. We've got a business that we earn income off that we love. I mean, we love to be in this game.
That's right.
And we've got real estate. So if you can actually balance that out and create a cash flow business that doesn't depend on the real estate cash flow, right, that you can actually build equity as well, that's the perfect balance. Now, if you don't have a business and you want to use a real estate as your vehicle of, you know, cash flow, which a lot of our students have,
it can be a business.
It can, and it can gravitate to that. That's my point. You can make that a business. That could be a business itself if you start thinking about business. I know you do a lot of work with some of your high level guys, and that's a concept you teach. You know, you become a consultant yourself, business.
Right.
And if anyone ever gravitates to that alone, that simple alone for me is worth the fee of playing at that level. Just that whole chunk of turning yourself into a business as a consultant within your own portfolio to maximise the tax system in Australia, which is really key. It's something that you've got to get your head around. Again, you do a lot of work. If people are listening to this are in your community, they'll appreciate that. You have to maximise the tax dollars. You have to control that dollar before it gets carved up and given away.
It's really about strategic planning. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Not just from a real estate perspective and a business perspective, but also from tax and asset protection and all of these things. You have to think of it, like a corporation. Mm-hmm. You know, you are a corporation. You need to start operating your affairs that way.
Yeah. Well
put. So where are you at now? Like, what's the road ahead for you now? Where's your goals, dreams, aspirations?
Well, thinking of Christmas, heading up to Noosa for
Are you coming up my way? Are you
Melbourne long weekend? That's buzzes up there for those that know. You know, for Melbourne people, I hate the races. Never really been into that sort of thing. You know, so it's always good to travel north around that time. And Noosa's got the triathlon up there, so. I mean,
you're going to compete in the triathlon, are you? I'll come and watch if you do.
it brings excitement to Noosa, because Noosa's really, you know, generally a lot of Queensland sort of spots are quite, you know, quite chill, and it's good, you know, it's good for that. But that's the immediate future. The long term future from an investment point of view, you mean?
Yeah, and even lifestyle, and you know.
Well, look, we love what we do, and you know, sometimes we bitch and moan about it, but we still love what we do. I love being in the heart and thrust of you know, the whole marketing, and that's a whole different conversation for a different world that I live in. From a real estate point of view, my style of real estate now is gravitated to developments, you know, the value-added strategy, you know, manufactured growth. Some of them I'm selling, I have to say, you know, as a cash flow model. But a lot of them, depending on the style of property I'm keeping. Now, for the benefit of the listeners, the style of property that I like is townhouses. I don't like apartments. The feedback I get from some of the high-level execs at ANZ Bank that I deal with and I have, you know, most contact with is they don't support apartments. They look at any sort of apartment developer as a problem waiting to happen. But when you're doing townhouses or, you know, sort of low density stuff, 6, 7, or 8 townhouses, even though you're entering into the commercial realm, then it's a bit of a different, you know, building contract. It's a bit of a different lend. You know, they're okay with that. They're much more favourable to that style of development. I also think that style of development, that style of stock, you know, 2 and 3 bedroom townhouses, if you can get a 3 bedroom, prefer to 2, but it depends on, you know,
depends where it is.
Councils can do and all sorts of things. And, you know, sometimes having 4 2s is better than having 3 3s, right? Based on the end values. So I'm really always have been bullish on townhouses because there's a significant land component, and because I'm keeping, I want the growth. You know, I'm not so cash flow centric. You know, that's like you say, there's no one shoe fits.
That's exactly right.
So you've got to look at your own circumstances. So for me, townhouses are the style of choice. I mean, just in this area that we sit today, and you're down in Melbourne, you know, tripping through here, you know, and I'm a lazy developer. Now, I've got about 16 townhouses just within a kilometre and a half here. Mm-hmm. I've taken 1 house and I've turned it into 4. And I've done it over time. And I'm what you call a lazy developer. I'm the worst developer. The permits take longer. The finance takes longer because I'm busy doing other things. But over time, because you're buying land, over time, it just, you know, incrementally just grows. And when you put the townhouses on there, you get advantage of the high use, and you increase your cash flow as well because you know you've got 4 rents instead of 1.
That's right.
And is Ivanhoe a hotspot? No. You know, Ivanhoe's not a hotspot, but I've made millions because I'm not willing to drive to, you know, with all due respect, I'm not willing to drive to Watsonia, which is only 2 hours away from here. It's 2 more minutes away from here, right? I'm not willing to drive to, let's say, to Greensboro, right, which is maybe 15 minutes away. So when people think about hotspots, and with the inefficiency of the market, it is, your hotspot can be in your own backyard if you know what you're doing.
That's exactly right. And it doesn't matter what that market's doing. If you're doing manufactured growth, you will make money regardless of what the market does.
Exactly. So that's what I'm into. I'm into everything. I don't buy a single front anymore unless it's absolutely extreme value. You know, but I'm looking at, you know, I've had a lot of deals passed up where they're like $100,000 below market, but I don't buy it because I can't do anything with it. These are things like Carlton, Collingwood, Fitzroy, you know, just standard single fronts where I've got a lot of mates who said, look, this is cheap, buy it. I think, yeah, I'd rather buy 800, 1200 square meter block a bit further out that I can actually do something with for me. That's my style of development.
So obviously a lot of people listen to my podcasts and things like that. What would you say to them if they're sitting there going, I need to take action, I need to be in a better position than where I am now, you know, I need more cash flow, I need more money, more whatever, what would you say to them?
Now, this is going to support you, it's going to sound like there's a bias to it, right? But the first thing, and this is what I do in all things, right, is education first. You know, it's education first, right? Get yourself around mentors, number one. Then, within that education, if you join groups, find like-minded people who are doing the sort of things that you're thinking about doing, even if you don't know what you're doing. You've got to get around like-minded people, right? And then you can sort of figure out what's the best plan forward for yourself, right? I mean, our groups are great from a real estate perspective. Just put it in a different perspective, right? I'm interested in health now, right? So what do? I buy every single, I'm on every single blog that I can read. You know, I try to figure out who's actually congruent, who's real. You know, I get a coach. I've got a specific coach, a personal trainer, who's won over 50 Mr. Universe in Australia, whatever competition, 10 times in a row. So
We're going to see you on the pages of Men's Fitness.
To get to that level, he's gotten to 5% body fat every year for the last 10 years.
Wow.
I think this guy's a god. You know? But he's never made any money from his craft. He just does it because he's a complete nut. But I pay him $5,000 a year to go for one training session a week and access to his gym, which I never go. I go to another gym. I just go to his session. Then I buy every single book I can get. Plus, I'm into, whatever supplementation. I'm, part of David Asprey's Bulletproof concept. I'm into all sorts of forms of training. And what I keep seeing now, I understand now the training cycle that's specific for me, right?
Mm.
So I'm not, you asked an investment question. I'm just giving people a point of view is when I want to do something, I invest in myself. And the health one is a big one for me, So I want doctors around me, I want, naturopaths around me. I'm happy to spend whatever to get the information and knowledge that I can, up to the point that I can. I mean, I can't, there's some people who go and spend $250,000 and do these, monthly retreats. I don't have that type of time, and, $250,000, I'm thinking, well, I can get it through other mechanisms.
Mm.
So, but if you're in an investment, I'm always education driven, because that's the world that I come from, Getting involved in Knowledge Source was a whole concept for me to run a seminar company to go on this journey of education. Back in the day, I used to say, look, I was spending that much money on education and seminars, I thought it'd be cheaper to run one than actually get involved in one. That was the mantra back then. But I'm constantly in education. In my marketing world, I was just telling the guys in the office today that I've spent $12,000 on marketing courses from different people in the States. Now, some of these courses, I think I'm smarter than the guys teaching it.
Hmm.
But I'm looking for 1%ers.
Yep.
So for me, 1% will move a big dial, right? Now, in real estate, in fairness, I've got you. So I don't have to invest. I just invest time and I've got people like Mark Rolton around me, and there's Jason and Amy who do developments, and I've also got some experience myself, and I've got a lot of property mentors who are property developers who would never teach. You'd never see them teaching. They don't understand that world. They think it's so simple that there's nothing to teach. But we know there's some nuances that you can give an individual that can make a big difference. So that's why I say education first, like-minded people. You've got a great mantra is, stop watching, Housewives of Melbourne now. We're at that. It used to be New York. Now we've got Housewives of Melbourne. You say stop watching that. And that's true, because if you spend an hour of your time, you can create mastery within 6 months. Just an hour of your time a day. And look, I'm into Games of Thrones, and I'm into House of Cards, and I'm into but I've done the hard yards, so I can spend a bit of time enjoying myself, sitting down with kind of my wife and watching that of an evening, right? But I remember when I didn't have money, I never used to do that.
No,
I was spending that hour trying to craft my game, getting up an hour earlier, going for a walk, listening to personal development tapes, building myself up to take the appropriate action, So that's my 5 cents worth about, taking advice is find the tribe.
Find the tribe.
Mm.
Mm. Well, look, you've been great talking to everybody today and adding a lot of value to everyone who's listening in. And, thank you very much for coming and joining me.
It's been a great pleasure.
So, guys, look, just before we take off, there's a couple more things that I want to go through with you. First of all, I'd really love you to get onto iTunes and leave a comment for me, leave a review. It's really important. I will read all of those reviews, and I'm actually creating a little bit of a competition. So when you write the review, what I'd like you to do is to cut and paste whatever you've written there, and obviously I hope you're enjoying them, and you can give me some suggestions even as to some other topics that you'd like me to cover. And then we'll then cut and paste that and send it off to review@iloverealestate.tv. So that way that I can see them. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give away some prizes. Now, as you know, I've written a number of books, and I've got a lot of, CDs and DVDs and other things there. And what I'll be doing is picking someone every single week, and I will be in the mail just out of the blue. You'll get a little present from me just for leaving that review and and you know, letting me know what you think, because it's really, really important there. So one more thing, I hope that you are actually enjoying the coaching and everything that we're doing. And if you feel it's adding value to you, then I'd like to be, you know, talking to you and mentoring you and coaching you every single week. Now, the best way to do that is for you to subscribe, because I'm going to be there talking and bring amazing content to the table, whether it be trends, whether it be, you know, interviews with someone like the caliber of John who we've got here today, or whether it be just talking about a particular strategy that might make the difference between, you know, you achieving your goal in 30 years as opposed to 3 years if you implement that strategy and put it into place. So make sure that you actually subscribe to iTunes, so then it comes to you automatically. You'll get a notification that I've done a new one, and then you can listen to it in your own leisure. So you can find where, you know, how to actually do all of that on the iTunes website, but make sure you send those emails in to me of your cut and paste of your review, and expect a present in the mail. So thank you guys, thank you for listening, and I'll be back again next week with another exciting topic. See you soon. Bye.